Hello and welcome back to Big Mouth, home of sophisticated pop chatter since 2016. I'm Andrew Harrison and with me is Sean Pattenden, the iron-willed Nancy Sinatra to my worn-out and knackered Lee Hazelwood. Hello, Sean. How's your week been?
It's been busy, thank you.
What's it been busy with, just general?
Well, I finally just put those fanzines that I was talking about before online. So you can get the first one and the second one will be available.
Where can they get them? How do they?
They can get them at raw-art.co.uk. So the first one is the Stephen Fry, Victoria Wood, Alan Bennett. All real interviews, I have you know.
This is like gold. This is like to kill for gold stuff, isn't it? If you were like Saga magazine or something, you'd bust the gut.
It's got Saga written all over it. We were very rock and roll Saga. Cardigan wearing it as teenagers, yeah.
There you go. What was your favourite moment this week? Did you enjoy the woman who ordered a Mariah Carey birthday cake but got a Marie Curie one instead?
Isn't that wonderful? And they did a really good job as well.
It was great. It was really good.
Really good picture of Marie Curie. And then it's got the pink cupcakes round the edge, which I thought, you know, a juxtaposition, fine.
I'd love to hear Marie Curie's glitter. It would be brilliant.
I did once get James Joyce on nail decals once, because you could get anything you liked, and I thought that was hilarious.
James Joyce nails?
Yeah, so, you know, I haven't bought them out yet.
I just wonder if there's a disappointed physicist somewhere going, who is this woman and why is my cake covered in glitter instead of, like, Röntgen readings and things like that.
Physicists like Maria Carey too.
Absolutely. I think the moral is be careful when you're ordering your cake. Definitely send a picture or you'll order a Post Malone cake and you'll get Shane McGowan with his terrible gnashes looking at you. A service announcement before we meet our guests next week. I'm recording the show in the mud and dust of Glastonbury, so Sean gets a week off and the show will be with you on Tuesday rather than Saturday as it usually is. So hold tight for Noises Off, special guests if I can grab them, and the true festival spirit, hem, hem, hem. Sean, who's our first guest?
Funny you should mention. The first of our guests is Richard Benson, former editor of The Face, writer for Wired and other magazines, and author of the fantastic books The Farm, which is not about the groovy train hitmakers. It's about his dad's life in agriculture and The Valley, 100 years in the life of a Yorkshire family. It's all a far cry from wrangling the likes of The Verve, Chloe Sevigny or The Fugees for the cover of The Face, as he did in the 90s, but life does roll on. Welcome back to Big Mouth, Richard. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Sean. Thank you.
Who was the biggest nightmare to get on the cover of The Face?
Oh, my God.
And there must have been a fair few.
It wasn't... The biggest nightmare when I think about face covers wasn't about getting somebody onto it. It was about what we did when we had the photograph. So we had that nightmare once that people often have doing magazines where... In a quiet time, it would have been, I think it was December, with the cover that we had fell through, and we had to get somebody very quickly. And we had a contact with Charlene Spiteri of Texas fame, who was at that point recording with Method Man. And we said, can we do her and Method Man in the studio? And we'll photograph them in the studio and we'll just have to make the best of it. So we did that. And when we thought, oh, all right, saved. It'll be all right. It'll be all right. We have a January cover. It'll be all right. We got the pictures back and Method Man was so stoned in every single picture. His eyes were actually closed. So if you see the cover of, I think it's probably January 1999, if you look closely and you know, you can see that Method Man's eyes are actually photoshopped onto his eyes. They're not his eyes.
Was there not any kind of clue in the name Method Man that he might not necessarily be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed at all hours of the day and night?
Hindsight is a great thing.
Yeah, it's a great thing, isn't it? Yeah. I should imagine Method Man was smoking that much that Charlene was a little bit fuzzy around the edges.
I would imagine. Well, the other thing that you can see visibly in the photograph is that he's basically leaning on Charlene. So he's not even able to stand. She's a literal crutch.
Yeah. Lean on Charlene.
Yeah. What do you make of the new face? Have you seen the digital?
Yeah, I've seen it. I mean, I thought it looked, you know, fine. It looked like kind of what I expected it would. And I felt that I've never known a magazine to launch that hasn't 6 months later slightly adjusted itself and worked itself out. So I think that it's not to say anything negative about where it is now particularly. But I had the sense looking at it, I thought it'd be interesting to see where this is by the end of the year, really. Mm. And it'd be interesting to see what the print edition's like as well, because they're doing a print, aren't they, in the summer at some point.
Yeah. So, yeah, summer, early autumn. That means there's a 15-year period where The Face didn't exist. Do you ever think what they would have done with people like Amy Winehouse and Pete Doherty in those years?
Yeah, because I think that the reality of that magazine, maybe all music magazines, is that... You know, it went in peaks and troughs. So it did very well in the '80s because it fitted the '80s, and then at the end there's a bit of a kind of a lull in the culture, I think, that it was covering towards the end of the '80s. So it went a bit flat. Mm. Then Rave and everything happened, and it came back. And I think they closed it at a point what would it have been, so early 2000s, just before Amy Winehouse, all the stuff in Camden, the Strokes, all that stuff, just before, well, the Strokes had happened by then. But I think there was a real flowering of British pop culture just after the Face had closed. I think if they'd kept it going for longer, but I understand in a corporate environment they couldn't, but it was, so I think that there were quite a lot of people looking back that they would have done really interesting stuff.
They
with,
could have
really.
Also done the Girls Aloud thing, pop stars and talent shows in a different way.
Also retains a big mouth this week is Hannah Verdier. She's an escapee from the smash hits Reform School for Young Pop Delinquents. Now she writes about TV and podcasts for The Guardian. Slides brown envelope across the table. Hi, Hannah. How you doing? Welcome back.
Hello. Good to be here.
You are on the telly beat. And we thought the next season of Killing Eve was pretty good, but it's been getting a bit of a kick in, hasn't it? What's your take on the new...
Is this the time to admit that I haven't watched the first one yet?
What? Sacked from The Guardian?
I know. I didn't even watch the last episode of the last one. I lost interest.
Good heavens.
Right. I know. I know.
It does happen. What about The Handmaid's Tale, though? Because that is another one that sort of has been... You know, it had season two issues, and now season three is upon us. What's your take on that, on where they're going with that one?
I think, I don't know, because I just think making a show out of a book, it's just, where can you go with it?
Yeah. I mean, they sort of like created the world so sort of perfectly in the first one. And the great thing about the book is it doesn't try to tell you the entire story of that universe. It just shows you the story of a little corner of it and the big things are happening elsewhere. And yet they have tried to sort of turn it into a grand overarching grown-up Hunger Games with, you know, loads of political content kind of thing.
Yes.
And it's like they've sort of overreached themselves a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes I'm confused by it when they're driving along, singing along to Gwen Stefani, and I think this isn't quite how I pictured it in my head, but... Then it never will be, will it?
As the watcher on the wall of telly, what are you enjoying at the minute? What's the best stuff for the moment?
Oh, the best stuff. I am watching Years and Years. Mm. Well, in fact, I'll come to that later.
Yes.
But also, I'm enjoying really bad TV on Netflix. Renée Zellweger in like a reversal of Indecent Proposal called What If?
Right.
It's so bad. It's knowingly bad, but it's good.
No, what is it? Give us the quick sort of a reversal of Indecent Proposal. It's not basically so, she's cougaring around.
Yeah, so Zellweger is like Queen Cougar and she's got some money to invest and she wants to invest in a company, but only if she can have one night with the company owner's husband.
I think that might fall foul of company policy, HR and due diligence, actually.
And it looks like health and safety.
Health and safety, definitely.
I know, I just don't think you can do that these days, but she does, she pulls it off.
You're going to wreck your insurance on something terrible there.
It's a legal minefield.
It is.
It is.
In the unlikely event that anybody would want to listen to any other podcast, we believe you've just launched Podcast Bangers.
I have,
What's
yes.
Podcast Bangers?
It is my weekly email bulletin about podcasts, because I still think there's a lot of people that say, oh, what's the next true crime one I can listen to, or where do I even get them, where do I start? Oh. So it's for people who've heard it all and people who are just starting out.
And how many biscuits do I have to give you to be put at the top of the list every week?
Well, you know, you're on my content plan, let's just say that.
Oh, nice, that's what we want. What's on our content plan for the show this week, Sian?
Well, Hot Chip, Mum and Dad favourites, are back with their seventh album of bleepy melancholia and hands in the air beats. Where do Alexis Taylor and his oddball colleagues fit into the contemporary pop landscape? And is a bath full of ecstasy put the Radox into rave? We chew our fingernails down to the bone for In Fabric, a very unusual indie horror movie from Peter Strickland, director of Barbarian Sound Studio and The Duke of Burgundy. There's a dress, it's accursed. And why doesn't Marianne Jean-Baptiste just give it to Sue Ryder like any normal person would? The answers will terrify you. And producer to literally everyone, even us probably here, Mark Ronson finally releases his much-previewed album of sad bangers, Late Night Feelings. It's got Miley Cyrus, Licky Lee and Alicia Keys on it, amongst others. But is there more to it than pop enormousness? Don't forget you can get every edition of Big Mouth a day early by supporting us on Patreon. Pledge £5 a month to help us cover our studio bills, the mere price of a pint, and you'll get the show as soon as it's ready, plus the exclusive extra bit just for Patreon backers. This week, we're adding to our database of the albums that ought to be force-fed to young people for their own good, and the ones that ought to be rendered invisible and unmentionable, like Stalin did with Trotsky. It's very much like that. New Patreon backers on the £10 a month tier also will now get a free Big Mouth mug too. Perfect for a warming cup of tea while you try and work out what's new on Netflix. Search Patreon Big Mouth to find out more.
Let's start the Sad Bangers edition of Big Mouth with Hot Chip, Synth Wonks, Connoisseur Ravers, Over Emotional Big Girls Blouses, and All Round Good Thing in my book. Since signing to Domino Records from Parlophone in 2012, they've experienced a bit of a creative second wind. They're now festival mainstays, and they dependably mix the poignant and the ab in it, just as New Order used to. Will we want to sink into a bath full of ecstasy? We're going to find out after this track, Spell. Richard Benson, Hot Chip would have been pure face catnip back in the day, wouldn't they? Dancy tunes, look a bit weird, got art and fashion connections, British.
They would have been face catnip. Yeah, it's fair to say that. And this album for me really did a very difficult job of taking them somewhere else.
Yeah.
And when you thought that they may well have exhausted their ideas after about 20 years in the game, I thought it reminded me of a little bit of some other bands who were also face catnip, like the Beloved and Primal Screams Come Together. I thought the last track on the album is it felt like they'd gone. They've thought a lot about gospel, haven't they? And
yes.
How to get something more emotional, uplifting. And the thing that interested me about this, I was genuinely interested to know what other people thought about it, was that if you're Hot Chip, do you have a problem? Like, what do you do when you make a new album? And if there was any issue that they had, it was that they consistently do these 8 out of 10 albums that they're ever so good, ever so technically accomplished, never quite as exciting as the live show. And is there a challenge there to get a little bit more emotion and looseness into the records? And I thought if that was something they thought about, then I definitely think they did it with this.
Yeah, it is very kind of, I mean, it's very emotional. It's not necessarily very kind of grab you by the lapels and scream in your face. It has that tone of, it is their seventh album. They're all in their 40s now. They've been around the block. And it's got that sort of lovely mix of sort of experience and melancholia that fits really well with the housey approach to tunes. And it is a very housey record. There's loads of 4/4 on here. Loads of that lovely sort of thing of a hugely isolated bass line that just drums away while Alexis's very particular voice, which is, the benefit in it is it's quite, he's not a leather-lunged diva by any stretch of the imagination. It's an indie rock voice, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's kind of, deliberately sort of thin and undemonstrative and kind of approachable. Hannah, are you a fan? Are you a Hot Chip person?
Yes, I can't believe it's a seventh album because I still think of them as like that new band that I quite like. So it shows my age there. I'd always put them on my 2019 playlist. Mm. But like Richard said, I did think of The Beloved during it, which made me so nostalgic because they're one of my favourite bands. Mm. And I really like what they did with it. I was quite interested to see that two of the songs, Echo and Spell, which are two of the really good ones, they started out as Katy Perry records.
Yeah.
And they were writing for her. And I could see how she could have been the leather lung diva and made those into something completely different. And I'd be really interested to hear those demos if she did get on there.
I'd be interested to hear, but I think I prefer Hot Chip singing songs like this because the way, house basically colonised American pop music about 3 or 4 years ago, didn't it? They're all big. They're basically EDM with tunes and with proper singing. Mm. And that's now the lingua franca. But to me, it's like just too professional and too sort of sleek and clean. You want the great thing about Hot Chip is they still feel like a bunch of weirdos in a homemade studio with plugs and soldering irons.
Yeah, they certainly do, but I think they've just got it right on this. I wouldn't say there's not a Ready for the Floor, there's not a standout single so much, apart from Hungry Child, maybe.
Yeah.
But I think it's an album that you really need to listen to as well. It's not background music. Mm. And I think that's what they said about it. They said it's not like escapism, it's you sit and listen.
Well, there's the holy grail of sort of house-based music has been, can you make the full, complete, listen to it at home as well as when you're off your chump record? And loads of people have sort of reached for that brass ring, as it were, over the years. And they're all, everybody wants to make their own Screamadelica. I think they've done it a couple of times already, Hot Chip, a record that you can listen to completely and get the full benefit from. But this, I think, is probably the best one.
Yes. It's one of those things where you put their albums on, everyone always puts them on in the office as a safe bet that everyone will like, and it's absolutely true. But I think, yeah, and I think his voice is great. You don't need to be the diva on songs like this. And I think it just really works.
Yeah. Sean, it very much goes for the ecstatic and the opening track, Mr. Diddle, is totally sort of guileless and happy. Is it harder to make straightforward, no subtext, guilelessly happy, honest records than sort of sounding deep by being dark and weird for its own sake?
Yeah, I think it's got a difficult task in that it doesn't, you know, every band is thinking, we don't want to make Brexit music, we don't want to be depressing, is there any way that we can do this without it just going into a minor key or something? And it's happy music, but then you've got these, as you say, very sad, very deadpan vocals going on. I found it difficult to connect to, though. It's very Fuigi and Miyagi, which is, man sounds quite like he's reading a shopping list almost and singing over techno beats. I like that, but I thought they should have either gone glossier or gone rawer with it. I found it too polished. I found it too impenetrable in the end. It was, there's the glistening Hot Chip record, we've made it and it's fantastic, but there wasn't any points of entry for me. I just didn't. And maybe it's Sad Dads and I'm not Sad Dad, so...
Sad Dad Rave.
Yeah. They've got that, and I think we're at a point where dance music is, as you say, very different. We are post-banger, aren't we?
Post-banger.
In 2019. We need to, you know, there needs to be the other layers to it to make it something different. So I just didn't know where it fell or where I fell with it.
That's what I like about it, the fact that it's unemotional music. It's very emotional music delivered in a kind of very low-key way with a voice that, as a fellow Big Girls Blouse, I can very much relate to. Alexis's voice, it does sort of divide the world a little bit.
Yes, it's not, as we're saying, there's no Colossus in spandex in the wings, is there? Yeah. It's all right, but it's quite thin. But I don't mind that, because then you've got Bernard Sumner, and it has that new orderness in it. That juxtaposition, it really works when it works.
I saw them at All Points East a couple of weeks ago, and they were sort of like second headline ahead of the Chemical Brothers. What you were just saying, Rich, about like, you know, the idea of like a bit more punch and a bit more wallop. Live, they really are like that, to the extent that they do Sabotage by the Beastie Boys.
I really want to see that.
Perfectly. with no kind of ironic twist, no kind of like, oh, we've made it into a house record, oh, we've turned it into a sad ballad, oh, we're doing it in the countryside. They just do Sabotage by the Beastie Boys, and they go bug nuts while they're performing it as well. And to see like them in the current stage outfits, which is sort of inspired by the album cover, that Jeremy Deller artwork of greens and blues and all this kind of thing, hopping around looking like the cast of, I don't know, a children's television programme, going nuts to Sabotage, was actually, I think, one of the greatest things I've ever witnessed on the live stage. Yeah. But also, like that track we just listened to, Spell, which is brand new, that was sort of at the centre of the set. And this crowd that hadn't heard it before is going berserk, because it hits all of the...
And I would say that's been in my head for the last 2 days since I was listening to this.
I've got a problem with that track, though. I don't know whether he's saying feel your curse or feel your curves.
It's curse.
Could be either. Double meaning.
Because it's a reverse spell, so it's a curse.
Is he, though?
Well...
Who knows?
could I ask another question about, not exactly diction, but about the words? Is it a bathful of ecstasy, or is it a bath full of ecstasy?
Well, you know what? There's an argument about this on some of the subbing sites on Facebook. If it's bathful, it should be one word with one L.
Yeah.
If it's bath...
It's a bathful.
But actually, does it matter? You know,
it does matter, like
a bath full of pills.
I think if you say a bath full of ecstasy, that feels more like a nice, relaxing, warm bath, which is kind of where the record's at. If you say it's a bath full of ecstasy... No, hang on. If you say it's a bath full of ecstasy, that sounds like the relaxing thing. If you say it's a bath full of ecstasy, it sounds like something you made, say, going to shuffle the pills.
I think they're going for the more sort of evocative, you know, sinking into
they're
the warm.
They're going for
Radox.
Both. Come on.
The Radox, bath of love.
It's ambiguous.
I assumed it was a deliberate.
There is quite a lot of midlife hurt going on in it. Yes, isn't there? The song Positive goes, you're washed up and you're hated, you're lied, you're berated. You've lied, you're berated. You're despised, contaminated, defeated, isolated. Okay, thanks, Alexis. You know, I've carried a lot yeah. here already.
We've all been there.
We have all been there. Yeah, there is a bit. You said sad dad music. It is a little sort of like you know.
I think he's having a crisis. I don't think that's hidden. Yeah.
Do you think he's expunged it with this record?
Are we his psychotherapist? Yes, I hope so.
I think it's probably expunged it. As I mentioned, Jeremy Deller did the cover artwork and the stage outfits, and it's a Gesamtkunstwerk. It all wraps together, that beautiful mixture of colour, but also vague fuzziness around the edges. I really like that. I think it all works beautifully together.
The strange glowing nipple thing makes me feel a bit funny and not in a good way.
The strange glowing nipple
thing. Yeah, he had like a... was it at All Points East where I saw a picture of him and he had a yellow... kind of overcoat with...
It's sort of like a life jacket
them.
With
yes.
nipples cut out.
Yeah. A nipply life jacket.
Well, you know, whatever. 21st century. So we basically liked it, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
Thumbs up for midlife dad rave. Midlife crisis rave.
Yes.
OK, time for a change of musical tone. We always ask our guests to bring in a tune for the listeners, their editor's recommendation, if you will. Hannah Verdier, apparently you've got a hot up-and-coming act that you want to promote. Very few people have heard of her.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard of her, but she's quite new to the scene. Her name's Madonna.
OK, right, yeah.
I gather she's from America or something. She's got a new album out and she's a new character, Madame X, which I like. And the song I've chosen is Crazy. There is another one called God Control, which is amazing on this album. Which I don't think has been one of the singles so far. But this one, it jumped out at me because it's the kind of thing, it really suits her voice, and her voice sounds a little bit different on it. Yep. But equally, it could be a little mixed song, I think.
How do you think she's dealing with the back? Because she's having to sort of try a fair bit harder now than she used to, and she's a little bit on the back foot. How do you think she's dealing with it?
I think she's always had to try harder. If we look at her output over the years, I think you look at Hanky Panky, she's had up albums, she's had down albums. I think... Sticky and Sweet was a bit of a difficult period, but then when I think I saw it on the tour, and I think she did it came alive when she actually performed it live.
To be fair, Madonna's down the dumper is most people's career high, isn't it? So you can't really knock it.
Yeah, but everyone always says she's down the dumper and then she'll come back with something different.
And I would say she's got so much flack for being 60. See, and it keeps being repeated and repeated and repeated. Just give her a break. Don't do it about other artists.
Certainly
see,
don't.
I was so conscious of not mentioning the 60 thing or her age, because
it's just
who cares?
Yeah, it's horrendous, I think, the amount of ageism.
Absolutely. Well, let's have a listen to this. This is Crazy by Madonna. And stop the ageism, people. I spent all night waiting up. It's gonna be the last night I wait up for you. Spent a long time waking up. Used to think that I was not enough for you. Now I see that I'm just way too much. You got your hands full, I'm misunderstood. Now I see that I'm who I can trust. And you got a lot of wrong you're trying to make good. But if you think I've been foolish and you only fool me once, I guess it's shame on you. Say now if you think I've been foolish and you keep on trying to do it, baby, I might switch your plans on you. Cause you're driving me crazy. Now, if you like Big Mouth, you'll enjoy another of our podcasts, Be There with Dali Loudspeakers, where we celebrate the stories behind the great recordings in collaboration with Dali, who make incredible audiophile speakers based on top performance and beautiful Danish design. There's a new episode out now featuring former Mojo editor Paul Trinker talking about the history of the Stratocaster, and Big Mouth regular Kate Hutchinson on the pros and cons of borrowing from the music of the Middle East and Africa. Here's a snippet of Paul choosing his favourite production of all time. Search Be There with Dali on your favourite podcast app to get the full show. And don't forget to subscribe. What is your choice for the best produced song of all time?
I'm going to choose a really simple song, which is Shipbuilding by Robert Wyatt. And I think that's especially beautiful because Elvis Costello did his version that was kind of quite nasal, and then Robert Wyatt's one was so laid back and there's not too much on it. It's mainly just piano and string bass, and then Robert Wyatt's very fragile voice, and it's very hard to blend those sounds together and have them all come through. And this was really right in the middle of the punk era, and it's somebody who was sold as a new wave songwriter in that the song was written by Elvis Costello. But it's just so sonically perfect, kind of very straight piano and string bass. In the track, you can actually just feel the air from the string bass, like when you pluck a note, you don't just get a straight sine wave, you're actually getting hit by the edge of it, and it comes through on the record. It's very beautiful.
A new winter coat and
Just a rumour that was spread around town. A taster of the Be There podcast there. Search your favourite podcast app for Be There with Dali and don't forget to subscribe. Right, it's Richard Benson's turn to choose a tune for us. What have you got for us? What are they all about?
This is a record by a kind of breaking through urban grime, I don't really know what you call it, artist called Mo Stack. And on this record, he's got Dave and Jay Hoos. And he's really, he's great. I think he's a bit like us, almost an kind of late 90s Eminem. Yeah. Sort of character in the, he's doing that Slim Shady thing a little bit. So there's a lot of persona of this slightly unpleasant sort of person. And he doesn't really do interviews in person himself. He just, and all his publicity photographs are just him with that massive sort of Parker thing where you can only see his face through a load of...
Hip hop Liam Gallagher, basically.
I think you've got it. Yeah. And this, the track is called Stinking Rich. And it's like one of those big summary records where you can imagine him on stage at a festival and he's got a brilliant sing-along call and response sort of chorus, and it's, you know, it's funny and it just feels a bit like North London 2019.
It's adding to our large reservoir of hip-hop songs about money.
Yes, it's not an original subject, it has to be said. It is equally unusually, it features a man who was not successful and now is successful and, you know, and is enjoying the fruits of that. But he's found an original twist, you see, and there's the genius of it.
Well, I love this one. Let's have a listen. This is Mo Stack with Stinking Rich.
All I want is more life and more vagina. Thought I was broken to the what surprised her. Couldn't line up girls and now the girls are lined up. Real little bills, he's the Glock provider. Bang, bang, bang. Let off another bound. If no one's touched, then he'll come back around for another bound. With some drillies and some cancelled houses that'll come to you and cancel your houses. Oh, what you on about? We was about, you was not about. Gang got the shoulder van in case you niggas wanna van. I would give a fuck about you niggas, but the enemy is kind of telling me I'm not allowed.
Moving on to quite comfortably the strangest movie you may see in the next few weeks. In Fabric, from director Peter Strickland of the Duke of Burgundy and Barbarian Sound Studio Notoriety, is as high concept as it gets. Haunted dress kills people. No spoiler there. But beyond that, it takes in everything from Hammer Horror homage to retail satire to Scarfolkian hauntology. Is it any good? And will you fear the ladies' outfitters department forevermore? Here's a bit of the trailer.
Purchase on a horizon?
I'm just looking, thank you.
The hesitation in your voice, soon to be an echo in the recesses of the spheres of retail. The dress is your image, onto what you project through an illusion.
I'm just going on a date. I don't normally wear this kind of thing.
Be bold. Your date will compliment you.
I think something's wrong with that dress.
Don't tell me you're scared of a dress.
The dog ripped it to pieces.
Spring spanking you almost. Such a pretty dress.
Anything nice in the sales?
Just a dress.
In Fabric, a.k.a. Get Possessed by the Dress. This is very much in the tradition of Hammer and Psychomania. Even the titles and typography is 1972, and it's executive produced by our fave Ben Wheatley. The setup is divorced bank clerk Sheila is looking for a man in the old-fashioned way, i.e. postal dating. So it must be set sort of in the 80s, maybe, we're never quite sure. She's surrounded by nagging visions of sex, not least with her son becoming increasingly active with his own striking girlfriend, played by Gwendolyn Christie. But in parallel storyline, there is a strange setting up of a winter sale in a department store that looks a little like Dennis Wheatley Sabat. Hannah Verdier, were you ever one for the 11 o'clock Hammer horror movie on the Saturday night?
Oh, definitely not. I don't even watch it. This is the thing. I don't watch horror. I don't watch high concept stuff. I'm a trash TV person. But I watched this and I must say I absolutely loved it. I think it was beautifully stylized. I loved Marion Jean-Baptiste in it. Mm-hmm. I thought she was amazing and so watchable.
Yeah.
And I loved the gorgeous kind of 70s colour and the sexy mannequins and the feeling that you could buy a better life with a dress and then you can't. And then it's going to come for you in the night and chop your hands off. Yeah, I was mesmerised by it. I really was.
Mm-hmm. It's Vampiros Lesbos at CNA, isn't it?
Yes.
What did you think of it? It really sets up. It's atmospheric. We get an idea that this is very much not 2019. This is a 70s, 80s sort of...
Yes.
Almost time warp, but very much true to that.
Yeah, I think it's hard to put a time on it, but yeah. The fact that she's circling ads for a new husband in a newspaper and... Also, the mannequin's pubic hair kind of gave a bit of a clue to the timing of it, I think, which is actually really refreshing. I think that was one of my favourite bits, really.
And that is a weird bit.
It's exceedingly...
I hope it's not a spoiler to say.
Well, one of the core things about it is the store that she visits is staffed by these bizarre women who look like Mom
from
Futurama.
Them,
they are... They're essentially sort of Transylvanian, matriarchs with insane giant hair, like something out of, when Gary Oldman was Dracula. And they have their sales pattern is just brilliant, isn't it? Because they speak in this beyond stylized manner. Instead of saying, this dress will suit madam, they say, this arrangement of fabric will create a prismatic resonance for your future romantic endeavours. And Marion Jean-Baptiste goes, have you got it in small? Full of this, but it's as well as being gory and horrible, it's really funny, isn't it?
Yes.
Really insanely funny.
Some of the quotes, they're now online, which is good. I mean, the main, Miss Luckmore is the main shop assistant. She says, did the transaction validate your paradigm of consumerism? And she has that voice. She is straight from Hammer, European villain, isn't she?
Yes.
She has that
Middle
Eastern
actually,
thing.
I believe, a Romanian actress because she
is. She Fatma Mohammed.
She was in Barbarian. And she was in Duke of Burgundy as well. She's amazing.
She is amazing. Richard Benson, what did you make of this?
Do you know, I had a slight problem with this film. But it was it's probably my problem rather than the film's.
Yeah.
So I was watching the scene that I think you're alluding to with the pubic hair. Which
on the mannequin,
I don't know if it's a spoiler to say it, but it's a very strange film where... it's fair to say the shop assistants have a sort of sex with the mannequin, right?
Well, they love them, don't they?
Yeah. And at that point, I was watching it on a computer. At that point, my wife walked in.
Of course, at that point.
Always.
What are you watching,
Richard?
What
are you watching? And I said, it's for work.
Office setting.
Honestly, literally not safe for work. So, that's because what? So then we were talking about the thing. And I said, I'm going to be honest. I said, I don't know. If I'm going to talk to this on a show where with women on it, this seems to be a scene that is something to do with like the objectification of women's sexuality. And I said, in 2019, I don't know. I feel like it's not for me to make a decision. I didn't much like it, but I didn't. I thought as a bloke, you don't know what to say. So I'm here to tell you that I don't know what to say.
I don't know if I'm alone thinking that was. I don't know, it's a strangely, warpedly sexy scene. Am I wrong?
You're alone
probably.
In the sexiness.
It's pretty warped.
It's very warped.
I thought it is both because it's a film absolutely suffused with sex, isn't it?
And it's about the sexual desire of retail, isn't it?
Yeah.
The women who work for the shop beckon people in at the start of every day.
The beckoning is
to the sales, and they literally and physically beckon people in and almost cast a spell to get them to buy these 70s clothes that are all made out of nylon.
There is an absolute connection between fashion and sex, isn't there? We dress to be sexy. We dress to dress.
You dress for a date.
And Marianne Jean-Baptiste. She's an older woman. She's like, and it's a great performance. She's like conscious of the fact that maybe she's not as beautiful as she was. She's being outstripped by, her son's got this astonishing girlfriend who's
amazing. Gwendolyn Christie is amazing,
but also horrible. Immensely,
she's awful, but amazingly played. She plays
it's
really well.
It's a film that's both about sex and can be sexy, but also very weird and disturbing at the same time.
Mm. Now, did anyone notice, fun fact, Barry Adamson as the second date? He is brilliant. Barry Adamson from Out of Pop fame.
Yeah, Barry Adamson from a former Bad Seed. What a great talking voice he's got as well.
Oh,
yeah,
hasn't he? Did not everybody round the table fall in love with him and want to go on a date with him?
I'd date Barry Adamson.
I wanted to wear that dress.
And he had a voucher. And that's what I liked about the details. I've got a voucher, so if we share the pudding.
But that's one of the
details in this film are incredible.
The details are incredible. And if you go and see it at the cinema, you won't be able to do what I was able to do with this kind of digital screen, which is freeze it at the moments when we're looking at a newspaper front page or a small detail in the catalogue, because the catalogue plays a huge role in it. And you see that the dress has been worn previously by the brilliant Sidsa Nidsen, can't pronounce her name, who was in Borgen. He was in a lot of Strickland's movies, or at least one of Strickland's movies. And you see the little tiny detail in the catalogue is a colour, artery red. And the newspaper front pages as well have got these incredible detail. Like one of them, the club is the club that plays a role in the storyline, Zinzans. It says, Tuesday, mystery meet night. It's full of all this. And all of the news, in the fictional town of Thames Valley on Thames. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. We're not in the real world here.
Yeah. No.
And you've got that anachronistic thing of all the phones are ancient Bakelite jobs, but the son appears to be from now with his modern haircut. And you know,
it's a bit Jean-Michel Basquiat. I mean, you know, he could get away with being late 80s, early 80s.
I think one of the interesting things about it is you think you're entering the fantasy strange world of this demonic department store, but the more you see of the supposedly real world that's around it, it too is bizarre. I mean, we haven't talked about Julian Barrett and the bloke
thingy. Steve Oram.
And Steve Oram. As the
Who
work at the bank where Marion Jambert is.
Wangels, the bank.
Yes. Which is itself a circle of hell. And there is actually a circle of hell behind them as they're giving a horrendous performance review.
Yes.
So it's not just it's not just, you know, the performance, the department store is a gateway to hell. It's we're in a very strange world. Which to me, I couldn't work out whether I was watching Tales of the Unexpected, you know, with today's budget and music, or whether I was watching kind of Dennis Wheatley does Inside Number 9. I loved it. I thought it was brilliant.
I think what he does really, really cleverly, and he did it in the other films as well, is that he unsettles you, doesn't he? So people are speaking in different registers, so that the shop assistants are almost have got a kind of fashion speak or sort of psychology textbook speak. Then you've got what seems like naturalistic dialogue with the family. But then you've got the washing machine guy who speaks like a technical sort of a catalogue or something like
who
that.
Who is called Ron Speaks as well.
He is called, and so what you by the it's kind of a mixture of dream psychology and naturalism. And so by the time you get into the last third of the film, you don't quite know where to place any of it, and it unsettles you. Which is
and dreams are a huge part of it because they keep saying in this very strange. Arranged this very strange phrase that keeps saying, I had a sleeping dream. Who says sleeping
and that's
dream?
A recurring theme,
it's a little kind of kid. It's quite Twin Peaksy in that respect.
Yeah.
I really, really loved this film for the first half. I just thought, this is up my street. And it's really similar to Beverly Loughlin, Greasy Strangler, Prevenge. And there's a whole swathe of UK filmmakers making really bizarre films for no money. And I think the movement, it's really, really good. But it fell apart for me when it took it out of Sheila's story, who is Marianne Jean-Baptiste, and took it to someone else's story, which Ron Speaks, and his version of his life with the dress. And I thought it could have stayed with her because it was much stronger with her. And it was almost, there's two narratives, there's two stories. And I thought, well, that weakens it for me. I would have rather it would have been her story all the way through.
I kind of agree, but it was a little bit Peter Greenaway-ish in that respect, in that like it's messing with the form of cinema as well. And you orientate yourself. I think I know where I am. I'm in the middle of the second act, but you're not. You're somewhere else, and that not only has the dress kind of corrupted the sort of private lives and sort of comfort of the characters, but it's also corrupting cinema. It's breaking the film to pieces. You know, meta. It's metering the shit out of things. That I liked, but it's just great for individual scenes. Isn't it? The images of the dress just hovering in places where it shouldn't hover, and also the kind of film treatment, the immensely kind of degraded videotape feel of it, and the music by Caverns of Antimatter. I would go and see anything called Caverns of Antimatter. Apparently, it's one of Stereolab.
Oh, okay.
Just has that sort of intensely oppressive idea of sort of old technology and old culture in decay.
He's really interested in music, isn't he?
Strickland, the director,
Didn't he? Was the Duke of Burgundy was the other bloke out of the Horrors?
I think
it's it Cat's. There's that band Cat's Eye, isn't it? Cat's Eyes and Faris Baghwan.
Yeah.
I think so. And then the first one was Nurse with Wound, maybe, or
I don't know. Actually, it's possible,
I think he's done collaborations. He's really into.
But Bavarian Sound Studio is about sound, isn't it? It's about this sort of oppressive world of a Foley artist where basically sound sort of figuratively begins to pursue and destroy him. But yeah, I mean, it's really musical in that respect, and musical in the avant-garde sense.
Yeah.
You know, this is it's like very Radio 3 Late Junction, very broadcast, very Warp Records.
Very, yes. And but it's Brook Films who are, they are associated with Warp, so it's all one giant circle.
It's also very blue jam, I thought. Very much like a feature-length blue jam thing.
Yes, mixed with Suits You, Sir.
Yes, it's the blue jam, Are You Being Served?
I was going to say, was I the only one who kept thinking of Are You Being Served? Especially when you get the old guy on it. I thought, oh my God, it's Mr. Grace.
It's Middle European, it's Are You Being Served? It's what it is. It's Middle European, vampiric Transylvanian. I could watch this film over and over. I'm going to watch it again.
Good Lord.
I thought it was brilliant.
I'm going to watch more of his other films because I've missed them.
I also thought this is what it would be like if you made a feature-length version of the Tomorrow People title sequence. Do you remember, one for the younger listeners there, do you remember the black and white thing, animated black and white pictures doing strange things? They're all
we're all looking at you,
gurning at me.
Yeah. Would you recommend it, Hannah?
Definitely. And I was, one more thing about Sheila, I was really rooting for her. So if there's a sequel, I want more Sheila.
Yeah, I want more Sheila.
Yeah, in every area of her life, I'm feeling it.
Well, the beautiful thing about it is it explains nothing.
Yes.
And it is both closed and completely open-ended. So you absolutely, I want to see a sitcom set in this store. With the vampiric shoppers. And we haven't mentioned the young Mr. Grace Captain Peacock figure, who looks like something out of impressionistic German cinema from the 1920s, one male member of staff who stalks around like Dr. Mabusa or Shock-Headed Peter with his long fingernails and his kind of... And his, spoiler here, his deeply uncomfortable masturbation scene. If only you could see Sean pinching the top of her nose right now.
Yeah, he's a strange cat.
He's a funny old
I would say if you were talking about recommendations or not, because of that scene, I would not recommend it to anybody who might be internet dating now and is looking for a good first date movie.
Definitely not. It's not a date movie in any sense.
Unless
the date is Halloween, it probably worked for somebody. I'm giving it two thumbs up, with very long fingernails.
Two out of two. There we go. Let's move on.
Right, finally, Mark Ronson. Change of mood.
Yeah.
Finally, Mark Ronson has been through the mill since the death of his formative partner Amy Winehouse 8 years ago, though he subsequently produced everybody from Dua Lipa and CeeLo Green to Duran Duran and Queens of the Stone Age, and though his work with Lady Gaga is credited with it actually changing the direction of pop, he has been prey to self-doubt and crisis of confidence. In The Guardian, he told friend of the podcast Alexis Petridis that he couldn't even make one of the biggest singles of the century, Uptown Funk, without fainting, vomiting and starting to lose his hair. His album Late Night Feelings has been a long and painful time coming. What's it like? We're going to discuss it after the title track. Call 3 a.m. minicab for Late Night Feelings.
I weigh the water, I feel it all. I ask myself a million questions in the dark. I lay in silence, but silence talks. It tells me heaven is no closer than it was. My heart keeps pulling in the wrong direction. I'm about to cross that line.
Now, Hannah Verdier, you were especially keen that we cover this album. What do you love about this project in particular and Ronno?
Oh, where do I start? I just think the whole concept of the sad album, that really appeals to me, and especially coming so soon after Uptown Funk as well. I think you said that was hard to make and this was easier.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that he's got everything and then he's been through this heartbreak and he's going to write about it. But also the way that all the songs have been kind of tempted out. You started with Miley Cyrus, Nothing Breaks Like a Heart. And I remember the first time I heard that, I was like, what the hell is this? I think I might hate it.
Yeah.
And then it was a grower. And then he's really single by single in a very eking it out way. And everyone, I think, for me, gets better. I think when I heard Late Night Feelings, the one with Licky Lee, I think that's amazing. And then the Camila Cabello one, Find You Again, it's a little over 2.5 minutes, but it's just got everything you need in like a modern pop song.
It's incredibly super crafted, isn't it? And the kind of sound world is really carefully put together. It's kind of it's quite second time in the show, fuzzy around the edges. It's kind of in sort of intermediate focus, very mid-90s, very kind of breathy vocals. It's not that very kind of clipped, clean thing that he's been known for in the past.
Not at all. And I wonder if that reflects his mood, but also he doesn't always go for the biggest. He's got mostly female vocalists on here, but he doesn't always go for the biggest. And I don't think, ever since he started out, I think with Here Comes the Fuzz, which I was reading, didn't sell very many, which is weird.
It's a great record.
Because I feel like that's one of the biggest albums that I own, really strangely. But he's got like King Princess, who is one of his, and Yebba, who's, I think, going to be big, but he's got her just at the right time before she gets totally Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, the people that he's chosen, apart from maybe Miley and Alicia Keys, aren't the most famous of people, but their voices really, really suit the songs.
I got the feeling from this that it was a sort of a Frank Sinatra in the wee small hours of the morning for the bangers generation.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like this. Sort of you're sitting in your high end hotel room with your glass of whiskey on your own,
totally
feeling miserable because you're at the top of the world and there's nothing there.
Yes, and I wonder. I mean, I wonder what it sounds like to people who are massively happy. I did have that thought. Mm. Like, if it's a heartbreak record, what if you're not heartbroken? What's that sound like? Fortunately, I don't know. But for the rest of the world, I don't know. You might be like, I'll stop banging on about it.
It is quite yacht rock as well, isn't it? It's quite it's unashamedly kind of sleek and clean and big, and it's quite an achievy record. You know, there's nothing ramshackle about this.
Yes, you can imagine Daryl Hall coming in and jamming with him.
Absolutely, Richard. What did you think? Have you been following Ronno's career and thinking about what it signifies?
I have, because when Amy Winehouse was releasing her second album, I interviewed her for a magazine, and I spent a fair amount of time with her and him in the recording studio, and he seemed like it was that really difficult point where you could begin to sense something was going to go horribly wrong, because she was visibly emaciated, she was off the hook, you know, and her dad was around, and he thought if it's him between her and disaster, then you know that then this doesn't look good, and the one person around who you thought it's good that she is with was Mark Ronson. So I thought he was a very nice bloke, and very aware of the business, but without seeming cynical about it. So he kind of knew what she needed to do, and he knew what he needed to do with records to make them work. And I think so. When you come to this album, you can see it's not cynically so, but it's very thought through, isn't it?
But he's very serious about it. He's in the tradition of the great sort of New York, London, Jewish songwriter, producer, you know, for whom it's a craft, but also it's a legacy. It's a thing that you're part of. You know, it's you can look back on, you know, everything from Tin Pan Alley through to the Brill Building, all that stuff. It's in a tradition, and he seems to understand that and take it. You take the business of making pop throwaway things very, very seriously.
I think he really does, and so that's why you get the pacing on it is really good, even though it's. I mean, the fact that it's got different singers and the songs are so distinct. I was thinking, is it a little bit like almost like a Spotify playlist rather than a coherent album at times? I wondered that. I don't know, really. I thought by the end I felt like I'd been on a journey with
an
album.
But actually, isn't that the right way to make a record now? Because people listen to playlists. If you want to make a good album, it's got to feel like a playlist.
Yeah. I had the same thought, actually, with the Madonna album a little bit, actually, where I thought this feels like a collection of songs. There's a bigger jump between songs in terms of pacing and tone, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just that, as you said, I think maybe that's where we're at now with albums. So with this, I thought that the stuff that really stood out was the less expected stuff. So when it became a bit more surprising, so when you got that there's this sort of really funky track with Yebba that kind of comes in the middle, and Knock Knock Knock, and obviously the Miley track, which comes like out of nowhere, which I think is amazing. Country disco, who knew?
Well, that's the strange thing, isn't it? Because you would not have thought, because Ronson, having sort of reactivated 60s soul with Amy Winehouse in the mid-noughties, has kind of been part of this kind of turning country into pop music again, hasn't he? Sort of what the Taylor Swift's kind of got to the very edge of it. He managed to bring it home with Lady Gaga. Sean, what did you think of this record?
Well, before I listened to it, I wrote down Marks and Spencer's music just to remind me of what I thought before I listened to it and then after. I find him really difficult to warm to because of that gloss. Because, this is a heartbreak record, but he is so untouchable and he marries supermodels and he has this life. You know he has this
life. But it's not making him happy, Sean. It's not making him happy.
He's got divorced from a supermodel.
Making him an album that will sell a lot of records.
Yeah, he got divorced from a supermodel, poor old Ronno.
poor old Ronno.
He's and back on the dating scene. He needs his love vouchers.
He needs to, get the red dress,
get the red
ladies.
Dress on, Ronno,
I could take him to see that film.
You could, yeah. Seal the deal. Me.
No, actually, I think he's gone out with a supermodel. A new one. And I still find him really difficult to warm to. It resonated with me, that Mercury Rev record that we talked about a few months ago, and getting the female vocalist in to emote, because obviously he has a problem with emoting, and he's not a singer, so that he's always got the creative block of how do I get what I want to say out through other people, and it can mean that you get a very very cold album because you've got a singer singing one thing and the musician and producer doing another. I still find it difficult to warm to. Some of the tracks are great, and I say I prefer the more hip-hop stuff, something that leaps out and isn't that cocktail jazz stuff that he does and the Marks and Spencer stuff that he does. It's a difficult sell for me. It really is, because he is just so glossy and so pages of Harper's Bazaar.
I don't know. I really warm to him, and I think he brings out the best in the women involved, whether he's writing for them or encouraging them to write for themselves. But also, in terms of, you said, Richard, about Spotify, he does that really wise thing of a playlist of short songs. And also, he doesn't bother with an intro. This is my new obsession. Songs that just go straight in there. Mm. You wouldn't get a Blue Monday intro. You wouldn't get a Hotel California.
That's a bad thing. That's what Spotify has done.
See, it is for us. But for this generation now, he's hit it. And who's listening to this album, he's hit it exactly right.
You're going to end up with songs that are 20 seconds long. It's a disgrace.
Exactly.
I don't want to live in a ringtone world.
But that's not for us. But he's not probably making it for us. He's hitting exactly what's in right now.
Is he, though? Because this is, he's talked quite a lot about moaning about what pop music's like right now, and he sees himself as a kind of an older guy making pop music for older people. He sees it as, music for people in their 30s and 40s, and he's moaned on about the overcompression of everybody else's pop and the fact that the songwriting is production line and the fact that it's got nothing to say. In his own weird way, he's a Captain Real Music. He's the mojo of pop music.
Also, making a song short and instant doesn't, of course, make it bad. I mean, I was thinking back to Motown when I was listening to this, and that's such, I mean, I know he's borrowed quite a lot from there over the years, but it's just instant. And also, you don't have to listen to it a million times. The first time I heard Late Night Films, I was like, oh my God, I love it.
You and your busy lifestyle. I ain't got time for this girlfriend lifestyle. God, I mean, the things I scribbled down was that the governing sound is 21st century Barry White meets Tropical House, and things like that. I mean, I like the fact that a lot of the vocalists are, they're not brands, they're ways, and you don't know them yet. They're kind of, they're like your host into the world of Ronno. I do think it sort of disintegrates a little bit towards the end into just generic big ballad. And I did wonder, I mean, I think it's presenting a kind of a world of feeling rather than actually saying anything. Very few of these songs are narrative songs, but that's the way of pop now, isn't it? Narrative songs are what old people like me like.
You want a proper story.
They're a collection of swatches of feeling and generals, and that's absolutely fine. And it is a little bit Marks and Spencer's music, but then Can we really criticise Marks and Spencer's music when we love their sandwiches so much? I don't think we should. You know, they can make a decent curry.
Can they sponsor us then, please? Absolutely.
But that's why I like it. I liked the feelings. I think...
I like the feelings.
I like
put
the
that
feelings.
On the sticky.
I like this feeling. I don't need to know the whole story. I just like how he's feeling at 2 a.m. That's enough
for me.
But
that is an art. It's, yes, giving off a feeling rather than having to tell the story.
Yeah.
He's having a go, isn't he?
He's having a go. I don't think I would rush to chuck this on as a matter of course.
No.
Not when the Hot Chip record is there, which to me kind of, because I am, you know, miserable middle-aged bloke, Hot Chip, middle-aged raver, rave.
Yeah.
Hot Chip's hitting the spot more for me.
They're both making sad banger music.
It is a sad banger episode, isn't
it?
Interspersed with vampiric lesbianism in the middle.
It's quite interesting because a divorce album, it's not really, it's a breakup album, isn't it? A divorce albums are like bitter and spiteful, really, I think.
Divorce albums are rubbish, aren't they, really?
Apart from him, my dear.
No. Terrible. Didn't like it at all.
This is for another time. Can we do divorce albums?
Oh, divorce album.
That's a good idea.
Do you think we'll be sort of somewhat tempting fate there, though? Stay tuned for that one, listeners. Anyway, well, so, yeah, I'm giving Late Night Feelings a cautious, you know, couple of thumbs up.
You gave them the film a couple of thumbs up.
Yeah, I've
only one and a half.
I'm running out of thumbs. Broadly, we liked it, but I mean, I think.
Broadly, it's quite good, but I think that's its problem.
Broadly, I quite liked it, and I play Find You Again 5 times a day. And you know, I might listen to it twice a day in its entirety, but I've got no strong feelings.
There we go. Sound of the summer. Here we go. Right, we're almost at the end of the show, and that means closing time chatter. How will our guests be trying to take Mark Ronson's mind off things as they share a lukewarm sex on the beach in the Rainbow Room?
Yuck.
Hannah.
Where do I start?
What would you be taking Mark Ronson's mind off with?
I thought we were doing the... Oh, no. OK, yeah. Years and Years.
Oh, yes.
Russell T Davies' absolute 9 p.m. masterpiece wraps up this week with a finale episode that's just stayed with me. You might know him from Queer as Folk. You might know him from Cucumber. You might even know him from Doctor Who. But he's set up this Manchester family and a story of how their lives changed personally, politically, over 15 years into the future. It's got a cracking cast. It's got Russell Tovey, Emma Thompson is the Prime Minister eventually. I hope that's not a spoiler. Jessica Hines. And last night's episode came just after the Tory leadership debate. And there's a lovely monologue that Anne Reid, like the matriarch, the granny, comes out with about why didn't we do anything trying to change the world 15 years earlier. And she just comes out with, beware these men, the jokers, the clowns, they will lead us, laugh us all into hell. And that's kind of stayed with me because the future is, of course, unrest. Emma Thompson is Viv Rook, this very populist prime minister, and there's death camps for immigrants. It's just a world of hell, but you can kind of see how we're moving there. And
it's just right
for this week.
That's not going to cheer Mark Ronson up, Anna. That's not going to take his mind off his sad bangers.
Oh, OK, we'll go to Plan B.
But it is. It's definitely worth watching, isn't it? Yeah. Richard, what's your closing time chatter?
Well, I won't cheer Mark Ronson up either. My closing time chatter is based on Noel Gallagher's interview a few days ago where he berated people who were complaining about Brexit, even though he himself didn't vote. And it was kind of clear from the tone that he was taking that he was, you know, using the traditional Noel position of, you know, you southern idiot, you know, you don't know what it's like outside London if you don't understand everybody in Britain.
And a man who lives in Maida Vale, yes.
Exactly that. And I just feel this is an incredible... I've mentioned it actually on the show before, but this kind of... It's a very common thing that happens now where you get people who live in London, who have very cosy, nice lives in London, but who are constantly telling people that they need to get out of London to understand what's really going on in the rest of the country. I think Nigel Farage is a kind of typical example of that, where he organises a march in the north, starting in the northeast, and then gets back to London as soon as he can. Tony Parsons is a doyen of it. The Brexit Party MP Claire Fox does a lot of this, where they're constantly telling you that if you live within the M25 and you do not support Brexit, you don't know what the rest of the country's
doing. Julie Birchall does it from the City of Brighton.
To be fair, John Harris actually does get out and wanders around and goes to Witness and Scam. And he actually does talk to the people and often finds things that don't really fit that agenda.
Yeah. Well, this year, for a project that I've been working on, I've been outside London quite a lot in Yorkshire, in an area that voted Brexit. And I find the people's ideas about it are quite mixed. I mean, obviously, there are quite a lot of people who are pro, but, you know, just because someone, an area votes 60-40 to leave, it still means there's like 40% of the people are probably going to be against it. So it's a nonsense. And
it's a
annoying
pop star thing who will say, well, I didn't vote, but.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, you should
I
have voted.
I love the fact that it was Liam who popped up and said, there's nothing worse than somebody going, I didn't vote, but I'm going to tell you what's right. Yeah. This is Liam telling you this. Yeah. The Danny Dyer of pop music is telling you, know, to wind your neck in. Sian, what's your closing time chatter?
Well, Facebook are launching their own currency, which they tried to do before it failed, but there's a new one called Libra, which sounds like something a woman might have to go and buy from the boots. Time of the month. And I wonder, you know, Mark Ronno's millions from this album, whether he'll be investing in Libra and what we'll be spending on. Is Libra going to be the Spotify currency now? Will it make you buy Mariah Carey songs and not Esteban the New Boyton?
Oh, no,
I can never say that name.
Marie Curie album.
Marie Curie Libra.
I can't think of anything worse than saying, yeah, I'm going to go to a data giant that is tracking my every move and everything I do and say and everywhere I go.
And sending me quizzes to find out what I really think.
Yeah, and monitoring me and profiling me and using AI to discover where I can market things. And then going, you know what, I'm going to give you charge of my spending as well. Mm. So you can see what I spend my money on as well as... You can actually tell what I spend my money on as well as trying to predict it. And also, what if I want to buy things that are not necessarily going to fit, the precepts of a future government which decides it's interested in knowing more about the population? What if I live in India or Malaysia or China? What if I live in Australia with an authoritarian government?
And it's also this idea that Facebook wasn't set up with an ideology. And this is the big problem about tech and ideology and forward thinking. They're claiming that Libra, girls, is going to be for people who, you know, are unbankable, who don't have bank accounts. It's going to help people in India. It's for people who stuff notes under the mattress.
I'm so suspicious of that.
You can tack that on to anything you say, but all of this stuff, and we are all bound in it. We have, you know, Spotify, we have Facebook accounts, you know, we have Twitter. All of us here are complicit in this thing, you know, as much as we don't want to be. I just think... I hope it's an enormous disaster is what I think.
I hope it's an enormous disaster as well. My closing time chapter is about tech as well, but it's much happier. I liked it when the Pakistani politicians did their press conference on a very, very serious issue and accidentally left a cat filter on. filter on the streaming, I think it was Periscope, was it? Or maybe it was Facebook Live.
I think it was Snapchat.
Snapchat, there you go. So they're sitting there. And I can't even remember what the policy announcement was, making immensely serious policy announcements about what's going to go in Pakistan. And they've got cat ears and cat noses and cat whiskers sticking on. And I thought that tells you pretty much everything. That says everything you need to know. You don't need to watch years and years. It tells you everything you need to know about society, where we are today. And, yeah, don't get Libra. Just put a cat filter on.
That would cheer Matt Ronson.
Our companion podcast, Romaniacs, one of the listeners on Facebook said, the only thing that's making the Tory leadership hustings bearable is Snapchat filters. And they were holding their phone up to the TV and giving Dominic Raab googly eyes and making Jeremy Hunt look like a Viking and making Michael Gove look like,
human.
One of the little kids with big eyes. So, yeah, give it a go. Anyway, that is the end of the show. Thank you to Hannah Verdier and Richard Benson for coming in. Hannah, what podcast are you bigging up in Podcast Bangers, apart from ours, obviously?
Oh, yours, yes. There's a new Malcolm Gladwell out, season 4, I think it is, Revisionist History, where he takes an exam to get into law school.
Oh, does he?
Yes.
Good for him. Richard, what's your next writing assignment? What's your next exciting thing?
I'm doing a book at the moment about nature, so I'm going to back to Bristol to talk to lots of people who are doing nature in an urban environment.
All right, enjoy nature while it's there.
While it's there, kids. Yeah.
These guys are going to stick around for the extra bit, where we're going to be choosing more albums that ought to be put on the national curriculum and more that ought to be taken out of the time stream entirely. In the meantime, thanks for listening from me, Sian, and producer Sophie Black. I'll be here next week, live from Glastonbury. Sian's going to have a week off. And we'll see you all here together in 2 weeks' time.